Good afternoon. The April 22nd regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. We will pause for the Pledge of Allegiance. To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good lunch. All right. Thank you for staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating. Our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on the regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner, should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give it to the staff. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature or, if in person, fill out the speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. All right, first order of business is to approval of the agenda.
Cole's motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Voice vote, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. There are several items that are requested to be removed from the final agenda. The first is a map amendment for 420 and 302 Bush Road, request to rezone under existing PD to permit mixed-use residential single-family apartments and townhomes. Is there anyone here to speak on that item? All right. The next item is special use 6 Patton Road, request to allow a solid waste transfer station in IL zoning district. Is there anyone here to speak on that item? All right. The third item is Flume Amendment for 101 East 34th Street. Is there anyone here on that item? All right, and finally, there is a map amendment for 101 East 34th Street. Is there anyone here for that? All right, I'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to remove items 1 through 4 from the agenda.
All in favor, voice vote?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. There are no items requested to be withdrawn. On the consent agenda, we have approval of the April 1st, 2025 meeting minutes, major subdivision, the station at Sweetwater, Cecil Oak Drive, and Clubhouse Drive, and finally, an execution of an MOU between MPC and Effingham County.
Cole's motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second?
Cole's second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. In old business, we have a variance to a GDP for 925 and 1303 East President Street.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. All of our items today are returning in some form from previous meetings. The very first is a request for a variance related to a site plan at 925 and 1303 East President Street. And this is specifically for the purpose of allowing a block length in excess of 500 feet in the DC zoning district, where a 500-foot maximum block length is permitted. There was previous discussion on this item at the last meeting, and ultimately the board asked the petitioner to meet with staff for the purpose of trying to find a path forward on essentially connections for other portions of the property that are proposed for future development but currently under petitioner's control. Just to show you, this is the standard at issue right here. Again, 658 approximately square feet that are requested, where there should be a maximum length of about 500 feet here. In conversations with petitioner, they did come and meet with us, and it was a somewhat productive meeting. However, unfortunately, in looking at what was proposed, ultimately, we could not reach a meeting of the minds because the proposed future sort of connections here that the petitioner contemplates are unlikely to kind of further the intent of the district. This is the downtown expansion future land use area, and this is currently within the downtown commercial zoning district. And so as you can see from these standards, there's really only for most of these districts one standard, and it's that standard for block length, and it's because this is attempting to create something that mimics downtown. Of course, the 500-foot block length is actually quite a large block. It's not consistent with what we're seeing in the Oglethorpe plan, but it is a block nonetheless that reflects more modern building standards. And so this particular district and several others permit 100% lot coverage. So again, the one standard here is being requested to be varied. This is what the petitioner provided, and of course, Mr. McCorkle will come forward and talk to you about the things that they proffered in association with this. In looking at this proposal and sort of coming to the understanding that it would not produce the type of circulation that staff believes the ordinance is attempting to attain, we did offer some alternatives. You can see here, I'll just flip through them quickly just so you can see we did engage with them in an attempt to try and offer a modified grid-like circulation pattern that could potentially reflect something that would be a development pattern for the future of this parcel that reflects its location downtown. So with that, MPC staff does still recommend denial of this requested variance, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is the petitioner here?
Yes. I'm going to pull up his presentation quickly.
Please state your name for the record.
Sure, y'all can see all of it. All right, thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Robert McCorkle here from law firm McCorkle Johnson McCoy here today on behalf of the owner, Riverview President Street, as well as the developer, Oxford Properties. Paul Austin from Oxford is here in town for this today. There are a few members here that weren't here 2 months ago, and we heard this before. And so just briefly, you know, Oxford has developed over 9,000 multifamily units across the southeast, including in Pooler, the Oxford Pooler project, and also 10,000 units constructed across the southeast, including the Ellis, which is a couple blocks down on River Street. The project, this specific project, is a 377-unit urban-style multifamily building that wraps around a parking deck and contains internal courtyards. And that's what's in front of you on that site plan on the screen. This site's probably familiar to everybody. It's been blighted, vacant, whatever you want to call it for decades now. It was an industrial site until 2022 when it was rezoned. This project cost for this site and just this piece of this is going to be north of $125 million investment into creating housing in the city. It's going to transform this site into a, you know, functioning multifamily site, which is the most desirable use for the city and the site. And also, this is only phase one. This is going to be developed over a series of phases, which is what was anticipated in our development agreement. And so this is just the first step of developing the site as we move probably directly to the west. It's an ideal location and use for multifamily, given its proximity to downtown and its ease of access to get to. What's before you today is this. It is just, it's a site plan that requests a singular variance. We're not here today to ask for a zoning or to get a use approved or to adjust a height map or to do any of these other things or ask for a reduction in parking. This property, like I said, was rezoned in 2022 from industrial to downtown commercial. It had unanimous approval of this commission. It also had unanimous approval of city council. As mentioned, at the same time that we got the zoning, we also entered into a development agreement with the city. That development agreement did a lot of things. It settled several lawsuits. It provided for the expansion of the Bilbo Canal onto this piece of property where this project is sitting, in order to drain probably about half of downtown and improve that drainage. It also provided for the future rezoning of the property. And along with that process, we also assisted the city in its force main project by providing storage on the site for pipes and other equipment. And because all design standards are met and the use is permitted, the single question before this commission today is whether or not this variance, this one variance we're asking for, is appropriate in this location and for this use. At our previous hearing, we showed that the design of the site was specifically created to be a minimal request. You'll see here in this design that there is an out parcel created in the front up here. This creates a right in, right out access on the President Street, as well as an access over here into a road that will come in. This is a signalized intersection here. The reason the block is so long, part of the reason, is because the property, this lot had to be lengthened in order to get to the traffic light. As it currently exists, the lot ends about right here. And so part of the reason for the long block structure is because we lengthened it. We're going to have to recombine it to lengthen it to get out here to the street. But ultimately, by having the out parcel, I'm going to come back to these, if you'll give me a second. By having the out parcel, we have met the standards. Sorry, this is turned around backward. We have met the standards on all the other block faces. So I just want to point out here, the block faces on President Street are inside of 500 feet. The block faces facing internal to the project will be divided by a road and are less than 500 feet. The block face on Bilbo Canal is less than 500 feet. The variance we're requesting is singularly related to the rear block face, which abuts all private property behind us. And we're asking for a variance to allow for 658 feet. We also showed at the last meeting that the design of the project is consistent with the surrounding properties around us. Behind us, we have the foundry. This is a view of the site today. So if you are driving down President Street and you're looking across the track, that's, you can see the light that's there now. This is looking at the foundry project, which is behind us, which is a urban style, large scale multifamily development. This is another picture of it from behind. You can see that it's gated, has private access off of, the new, Perry Lane, which is constructed behind the project. Across the street from us is the Riverworks building and the Eastern Wharf multifamily projects, which are here and here. You'll notice if you looked at our site plan of what it looked like from above, it is virtually identical to the two buildings that are constructed already directly across the street from us on President Street. This one, I may note, is about 615 feet long. This one is about 660 feet long. Both buildings were on sites that had previous master plans with roads dividing up those lots. This commission approved the removal of those roads for the construction of these 600 plus foot long multifamily buildings through amendments to the master plans. They're all wrapped around parking decks. They all have internal courtyards. This is the view of those buildings. This is a singular building running across. This is the one that's facing the river. This is the one that backs up, looking at the back of it towards our property. Again, a singular building with a lot of relief and a lot of design features, but this is what it looks like now directly across the street. Both block faces exceeding 500 feet. This is a kind of aerial view of the site. This is our site right here. Our site is directly behind this and a little bit to the left. This is the foundry where I'm pointing, but this is the general gist of the building. You'll see here a conceptual drawing of the design for our building. You can look at the two and see that they are very similar. What we were asking to do is very consistent with what has been approved and what was done across the street. We acknowledge that their zoning is different. We acknowledge that the zoning of the property behind us is different. But at the end of the day, the uses and the design and the construction style and everything else about it are incredibly similar. Also, I'd like to point out that we think we showed at the last meeting, there's no detrimental effect on any neighbors. To my knowledge, there's been no commentary from the public about this request. We only have one neighbor, and it's the foundry behind us, which is another large-scale multifamily project. The only people that will be able to see the variance, the length of the block on the variance we've requested, is in fact the folks that live inside the foundry. You'll see here on our design, by the way, this shows a block for a commercial building. We don't know how big or tall ultimately this building will be, but you can see that the property is divided up by an access road here in the front, and it will come back out here on the side, ultimately creating an L. At our last meeting, one discussion that we had on different criteria for this variance was hardship. There was a lot of discussion about hardship. And I could argue with you that having to lengthen the block of the project to get to the road was part of the hardship of this. I could argue that we've got to bring in probably $4 or $5 million worth of dirt onto this project in order to construct it. And based on soil conditions, that having one large building is better than having multiple buildings on the project. But at the end of the day, the consensus seemed to be from the previous meeting that there was a desire for a quid pro quo in exchange for this variance, that we would agree to connection points where we would connect to the public road system to make sure that folks on Perry Lane behind us or Wheaton Street behind us or folks on Liberty could get into our project and travel through our project without having to go around President Street, which is what you currently have to do. To that end, we worked with Thompson Hutton and we met with staff to establish these future connections. So this is our development plan, which Mr. Morrow showed. And I want to point out a couple of features of this. And you can see here, this is our site plan for phase one that is what is requesting the variance. This is the foundry building here behind us as it currently sits. We do not own this land here, just to make sure everyone's aware. We only own the portions that are kind of inside this drawn colored area here. This is imposed onto the picture, the new early learning center, which is being planned by Eastside United to show the location of that, because though it is not constructed, I know it's planned in the works, so we wanted to show where its future location is. And so a couple of things, these black crosshatch lines, we were asked to provide our best guess as to where we think the internal roads are going to be. These black crosshatch lines are those internal roads, which we're showing. We don't know how these phases are going to be built out. We don't know what the uses are, but this is our kind of best guess as to where they're going to be. Staff did provide us with four or five other options that they would like to see where we would lay out the structure and divide up and subdivide the parcel as a whole into the pieces that they think would work better. Our concern is frankly that it doesn't make sense for us to do that, and we don't know what it's going to be. It's going to put us in a position where we're just going to keep coming back asking for amendments to this in addition to the site plan approvals that we have to get. And so what we are proposing is that this development plan as a whole be submitted along with our site plan approval today with these lines showing our conceptual interpretation of what we think will happen, but with the notes on the plat existing that this is conceptual in nature and that this may change. What we are committing to permanently is that we will have connections to public road points. This is my handy coloring here. The pink are existing public roads. And I wanted to show this just to show the only locations where public roads currently touch our property at all is along the length of President Street and here at the corner of Pulaski and Oglethorpe. Other than that, as currently constructed, there are no public connections to our property or even touching the edges of our property. So these green lines here are roads that do not currently exist, but would have been in various stages of planning from the city and are to be constructed by the city. So keep in mind that part of our hesitancy to exactly lay out a layout plan for this is that some of the roads we're supposed to be connecting to don't actually exist yet. And so what we are committing to is that in each of these red dots, the general locations of these red dots, that we would provide a connection. So you can see here that we anticipate ultimately having three connections directly onto President Street. This is a signalized intersection here. This is a planned extension of General McIntosh. We'll have a connection there. And we're going to have internal connections so that these roads continue through the remainder of the site. Most importantly is the red dot that's on my marker there. Going way back to discussing this, there was concern mentioned by staff that we connect to the Hitch Village PUD and that that connection was the most important. And it was a struggle dealing with it, frankly, with developer and owner of trying to look that far ahead and figure what that would look like. But we ultimately came to the conclusion, and based on our meeting, that that's something that we should do and it's something that we're required to do. And so we are committing to make that connection. What's important about that one connection right there is that it ultimately, along public roads that are already constructed, provides access to the foundry into our site without having to go out to Liberty or President Street. It provides access to the future early learning center. If we have a grocery store or something on the site, they will be able to drive directly into our site. It will provide access from Wheaton Street. If folks want to come through where the early learning center is being constructed and come into our site, they do not have to go all the way back out around and go to President Street. And so this document that we're proposing to be attached to our site plan, our variance approval, will commit to make that connection there at the public road, which will ultimately provide that access. So we're ultimately agreeing to at least five public road connections in the locations designated and will allow access to all the facilities mentioned. In our meeting with staff, there were also a couple of new discussions that came up, one of which was the concern that we have pedestrian connectivity throughout the site. And we thought we would address some of these through notes. And so here there are some notes on the bottom, and I blew them up just so you could see it. And you'll see that it mentions here the internal road network is conceptual, provided that the future connections will be provided where indicated on the red dots. The site development will include pedestrian connectivity along roadways and between phases and parcels. So we want to make clear in our notes what we hope will be adopted today, that there will be connectivity pedestrian-wise and obviously vehicularly all across the site. So if someone's coming up from the Early Learning Center and there does end up being a grocery store in our site, or one across the street, someone could walk to it and walk back to Wheaton Street easily. The other thing is there was a request that we provide for green space. You will note the staff mentioned that there's 100% lot coverage in our zone. We're not required to provide any green space at all. We discussed this with staff. We understood the request. We understand the quid pro quo with the variance. And what we ultimately agreed to was that we would provide a minimum of 10% green space and all the additional parts of the project and of the project as a whole. The reason this is important is because it may end up being significantly higher than that. We don't know what it's going to ultimately be, but we have committed to a green space requirement, which is not something we're required to do under our zoning. So in our minds, that's a quid pro quo in exchange with the variance. And we believe we have attempted to respond to what we heard at the meeting 2 months ago were the concerns of council. We may not have gotten as far as staff would like us to go. I don't think the issues with staff are about the green space or about pedestrian connectivity or about our connections to the public road system, which I thought was really the main issue. Their issues seem to be specific about what our internal road structure is going to look like, meaning specifically where those roads are going to be laid out. And so that's really the distinction. And we'd like to leave it shown as conceptual with the understanding that we have five lots here with 90-degree angled roads, and we think we'll provide adequate connectivity. We think the project's better with the variance. That's as simple as I can say it to you. And the commitment, well, the variance and the commitments that we're making. We think attaching these commitments to our project and to this variance makes the project better. And it is consistent and almost nearly identical to the two buildings that are directly across the street. We have tried to minimize the variance only to the southern block face, and we are not having any detrimental effect. And because the buildings across the street, again, they may not be in the same zone, but we're not receiving some benefit that has not been granted to other properties. It's exactly the same as the properties that are across the street. Granting this variance ultimately allows us to move forward with what we believe to be is a great project and a great start to the development of this. If it's denied, ultimately this project probably goes away and something else comes back. And this is not a variance request where I'm not standing here telling you that if y'all don't grant this, that nothing's going to be built on this site. That is not what the situation is. Something is going to get built here. Will it be multifamily? Don't know. Honestly, the one use that would require a block face variance like this is probably only multifamily. Everything else is probably not going to be in a 600 something foot long building, unless it was industrial, which this can't be. So if this comes back as a hotel or as a million other things it could be, then maybe the variance request isn't needed and maybe that's what will ultimately get built. But here, because this use is so in need and because this variance does make sense given the context of what's been done around it, we think that approving the variance in our site plan along with this attached to it, which we've agreed to, is the best way to both gain some things out of this, like a little bit of green space and our promise to make these connections so that people can come all the way through our project and walk through our project, while also letting us move forward with breaking ground and building a great housing development. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you've got, if I can stop sweating.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Woodward.
The variance you're seeking is really just related to the apartment and the footprint of the apartment. So it would not extend beyond that, correct?
Correct. It is.
Once it's recombined, it would only end at the variance would end at the end of the apartments.
It would, yes. I will make this note. So one of the discussions we had in our meeting with staff was that if we ultimately approve this, that we would just say that the block length applied to the site as a whole. I'm not necessarily concerned about that. If that's a concern and we only want to limit it and we want to get a look at each one of these phases, then I would suggest we just strike item 4 on that list, which is fine if that's what we decide to do. Ultimately, the real request before you today has always been the intention of just being the southern block face of the site plan. So you would be approving the site plan as it sits.
Other questions? Go ahead.
Appreciate the going back and sharpening the pencils on connectivity. Noting or recognizing that in this plat, you've noted all of the internal road networks as conceptual. What's the difference between your conceptual road network and those proposed by MPC staff?
Sure. And Mr. Moore can certainly show them. There were several different iterations of it. One of them included a frontage road that ran across the entire front of the site from front to back, and then had a long road across the middle that cut all the way across this property and connected here to Oglethorpe. The issue with that, obviously, is it cuts this parcel right here in half and limits this piece, which, frankly, if we had to guess right now, is probably going to be another multifamily development. It limits it so that it really couldn't be used for that. If it had a road running through the middle of it, it would limit that to only being a commercial use in the front. So we were hesitant to commit to that in the beginning. Another one had this road running all the way across. The real concern seems to be the east-west connections across the property, right? And if we come straight across like this, or we come straight across like this, it kind of cuts these parcels into all long, narrow parcels, which very much limits their ability to be used for certain things like urban multifamily development. And so there are some guy wires here to a cell tower that sits here. And so if you cut this off separate by putting a road across the rear, you basically make this property completely unusable. And so we didn't want to agree to do that because we didn't want to make part of our property unusable. And we didn't want to agree to this definitively because we ultimately don't want to limit this to only being a commercial site. And so that's really been the distinction. Again, these are internal drives. I don't think what we're creating is blocks, or I don't think either way it creates blocks or length that cause any kind of real problem. It's just a matter of whether the connectivity is going to be one straight line across the entire parcel, or whether you're going to have to make a left or right and then go across the parcel.
The most southern end of the property you're talking about with the guide wires?
Yes, sir.
I'd imagine that's a place you're looking for your green space since there's guide wires?
There will definitely probably be green space. We're not to that phase yet, but there will definitely probably be green space there for a certain period of time. Honestly, we're hopeful that cell tower is not there forever. Or that it can be redesigned in a certain way that opens up the use of the property. But as of right now, it can't be used for really anything. So it will be green space for the time being.
Thank you.
Other questions? I think I have a question more for staff than for you. Mr. Morrow, can you tell me why the zoning is different and why it does not work here, but it does work on the other side of the street, on the other side of President Street?
So the other side of President Street is Eastern Wharf, which was a PUD. And if you recall, there was a civic master plan that was adopted originally in 2006 that had a much smaller sort of grid pattern. And over time, once a specific developer was identified, those several of those blocks kind of, you know, got meshed together to create those large footprint structures, or to create the space for those large footprint structures. It was a PD. They came in essentially with a master plan and said, we can work within this. This, for some reason, was given a base zoning district, DC. And so I guess I should say at this point, I misspoke previously saying petitioner needed a PD or a plan development or PUD. They don't need to rezone. Master planning, which is one of the benefits of a PUD, is something that can be accomplished in base zoning as well. And so that's essentially what this was attempting to achieve. We wanted to achieve a master plan so that we could understand what kind of the form, because we're in a downtown zoning district, what the form might look like for future developments. You know, it's conceivable at this point that once this one comes through, that you're likely to see a similar request on the other side. So the idea was we could kind of see that this is, you know, adjoining the canal. There, you know, may be some sort of an argument for a hardship, even though, you know, truthfully, the zoning district itself is attempting to create a form that has, you know, a maximum 500-foot length. So trying to work with that and understanding that the petitioner does not own all of this property, that was the idea behind giving it a PUD-like master plan framework to work with in the future. If it was this developer or if someone else purchased it, we would have a sure form for them to work in.
But it's not a PUD.
It is not a PUD. It is base zoning.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, are the streets city-owned or private?
That's part of the challenge. This was part of the conversation last time about places where where this kind of fell apart. Ideally, we would have had some, you know, city acquisition of right-of-way to sort of shape the public realm and sort of give life to the zoning district that was given to this. But the streets, I believe they will be dedicated. But the reason that we're having difficulty in getting kind of this imposition of form is because it is not form that was, you know, created by city acquisition of right-of-way.
Okay. All right, other discussion? Go ahead, Mr. Melder.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Morrow. What are the typical length of street blocks in historic downtown?
They are short of 500 feet. Actually, in kind of my analysis, I want to say they come up to about somewhere between 200 and 300 typically. For reference, the cemetery that is right here, the very large cemetery that seems
Colonial Cemetery.
That's about 500 feet on one side.
Including the police headquarters?
No, only the cemetery.
Only the cemetery. Mm-hmm. So when you include the police headquarters, it's even longer?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you find when the zoning limited the block size in downtown expansion districts, why it didn't mirror the smaller blocks of downtown? Why did it give 500 feet? And is that arbitrary?
I'm confident that it's not arbitrary, but it does likely reflect the fact that modern building standards do require some changes in kind of the granularity of what your grid would look like. Nonetheless, 500 feet is still generous and reasonable. There's absolutely no reason that you require 600 plus feet to do a multifamily structure. The purpose of these districts is to kind of create, mind you, there's no height restriction. So this could ultimately go up, you know, if you were attempting to achieve more density. I'll even go so far as to say I have an email from city staff stating they do not find there to be a height restriction here. So this is not within the height map. So they could do 100% on a 500, you know, unlikely, but a 500 by 500 block at infinite height. Potentially.
But I'm also recalling, you know, I just want to make sure I'm clear on the planning, that you prefer in this district basically block to block building, right? That the buildings front the street, that it takes up the entire block.
That is the intent of the district. Yes, sir.
Yeah, the intent of the district. So we don't want to have setbacks and smaller buildings within the plots, right?
Likely not. No, I would say this is absolutely more of a suburban form where we're seeing these elongated structures. We would see these, you know, anywhere outside of downtown, but ultimately downtown, you're looking for that gridded framework with height. You could fit a number of things. I think our squares, if you look in some of our historic districts, speak to the fact that they're a very flexible and adaptable framework. But in this district, we would expect full building coverage.
But just to make sure, the difference between like a more urban design and only in this one element, urban and suburban, would be that we want to have the building itself extend to the frontage of the right-of-way.
That is correct.
Versus a suburban, you would see setback.
20-foot setback or something.
Would say that the I think it's called the Felicity, but maybe Mr. McCorkle was referring to it as the Foundry, which is just south of this project. Mm-hmm. Is more of a suburban type multifamily development in that it's kind of,
it's completely enclosed.
That's right.
Sure.
Versus one that's just taking up a city block. And
that's correct.
Okay. So I just want to understand that. Thank
sure.
you.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Joyce.
So how far down President Street does this 500-foot rule go?
So this applies anywhere that the DC zoning district exists or a downtown district.
Where does that end?
That's a good question. I can pull up the zoning map if we have a second. Okay, only that. In giving the history of the site, Mr. McCorkle explained that this was kind of a zoning that took place to resolve some disputes over property and permitted the expansion of the Bilbo Canal. And so it did go through the full process, but this was the zoning district that was identified as being most appropriate through kind of that development agreement with the city.
So as you're driving down President Street, now you pass this 500 or 678-foot long apartment complex, and you keep going.
To the bridge.
Right. Anything, it can be any amount. With.
Not necessarily. I would say if we're getting at where the downtown expansion, say, character area might be appropriate, on the other side of the bridge, we would not necessarily expect that to date. But I think, these are unprecedented times even now. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions? Mr. McCorkle, I've got a question for you. You said that there was going to be a lot of fill brought to the site. Are you elevating the site or are you replacing bed soils?
President Street got elevated in front of us. And so we have to elevate the site if you've driven past it because they raised up the street.
And Bilbo Canal can handle all the water?
Bilbo Canal can't handle it. Part of the whole process going back 10 years before 2022 is working out floodplain mitigation, drainage, all of that for the site. So there are no wetland areas on the site. Everything's going to drain the Bilbo Canal. It's all been calculated.
Is this the area where there was a brownfield?
There are some issues on the very western end of the site up by the corner up there. The city actually, or the housing authority, one of the other owns that property up there, but not on this site.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. I don't have any speakers. No speakers online either.
No, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to, this Plunk, motion to grant petitioner's request specific to the proposed apartment building.
Jeff Netrebek, a second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right. Our next item is a future land use map amendment at 605 Old River Road.
All right. If you don't mind, again, we'll talk about these very, very briefly and together. There are two associated petitions. The first one being a FLUM amendment. to change a very small amount of the future land use map from residential suburban single family to planned development. And then the second being a rezoning petition to rezone the subject parcels from residential agriculture and protected river corridor to PRC. To plan development within the city. Currently, this is a property that exists within Chatham County, and this is submitted concurrently with a request to annex the subject property or properties into the city of Savannah. And so that would be the plan development designation under NUZO for the city of Savannah. Just to reorient everyone again, this is a future land use map. You can see that the only portion that does not have this planned development yellow is just this small portion here. I believe it's somewhere in the range of 7 to 8 acres. And then this is the current zoning map that shows residential agriculture and the planned river corridor designation for this very small portion here. And the existing zoning, I'll share with you the intent of these districts. RA is intended to protect those rural areas within the urban expansion areas of the county for future urban development and to protect certain rural highway roadside areas against strip development, which can lead to traffic congestion, traffic hazards, and roadside blight. I will say that this largely functions as kind of a holding district, if you will. If you could think of it, this is a district that would be subdivided to permit largely single-family, detached single-family residential development on approximately 1 acre lots. So I believe this is about 159 acres in total. Theoretically speaking, you would have somewhere in that range, one dwelling unit per acre, contingent upon the ability to provide septic and replacement drain fields for each of those homes. So the Planned River Corridor District is intended to create areas within protected river corridors as defined by the River Corridor Protection Act in order to help preserve those qualities that make a river suitable as a habitat for wildlife, a site for recreation, and a source of clean, drinkable water. So these are the existing designations. Again, to offer you kind of an overview here, you can see that the Savannah Manufacturing Center is just across Old River Road here. That's where that entry is proposed to align one of several to the site. We also have Effingham County right here. We have Bryan County and Fort Stewart that is in the vicinity over here. And of course, we're in unincorporated Chatham. To show the site does lie within the AE flood zone. And we can see based on the National Wetlands Inventory that we do have some wetlands that are present on the property. Sorry, this is in the 100-year floodplain. That's what this is indicating. All right. To look at the flume designation, these are all of the proposed uses that we're looking at within this particular PUD. The RMF2 district permits the full range of residential uses from single-family detached all the way to apartments. Additionally, the NUZO zoning districts that are proposed to be located here are the limited business and the neighborhood business, both of which permit residential uses in addition to commercial. This aligns with that suburban residential character area, as you can see here in Plan 2040. It does list all of these uses as well as small-scale commercial and apartment buildings with that density target around 3 to 5 units per acre. Again, staff found that this was particularly compelling simply because in this area we see a lot of flagpole style development, which is very much inefficient. So this is what's proposed. The petitioner is identifying a couple of entrances off of Old River Road. This is that main one aligning with 4 acres in the Savannah Manufacturing Center. And so in this area, you would see some commercial development and potentially residential upper story based on the information that we've received. And these PDRMF would be multifamily residential uses that would be within these areas. And we can see those intended routes of circulation throughout the development in the areas that are intended to be set aside as wildlife and, not developed because of the wildlife, because of the wetlands on the property. This is approximately 159 acres of mixed use, residential and commercial. In terms of the DRI submission, it was estimated to see 716 a.m. peak hours and 915 p.m. Based on up to 1,665 dwellings and up to 50,000 square feet of commercial space. traffic impact analysis will be required at a later state. And so in looking at the 2050 STIP, this particular segment of Old River Road was currently graded a C or better, which was acceptable. It was green. Staff would like to note that interjurisdictional coordination will be essential for phasing the development and for transportation network upgrades. What you're seeing here on your screen is actually a delivery schedule that was provided by the petitioner that was based on their conversations with city engineering for water and sewer provision. So this is their estimated timeline from 2026 out through 2034. Again, this is estimated. I should also note that the general master plan does include buffering, 8.7 acres of open space and 59.4 acres of aquatic resources. The Ogeechee Riverkeeper did provide some very insightful analysis on development on this particular site, and staff did take those into account in its recommendation, specifically calling for provision of a wetland plan, identifying areas for fill and preservation, prohibiting clearing and grading of the site until all wetlands-related permitting had been resolved, and finally, prohibition of any future on-site wastewater management. These are some initiatives that we are working toward. Again, there's been much conversation about development in our flood zones. And so just to say that we are cognizant, we are taking these things into account as we do our future planning, and also we are looking at the work required to upgrade our standards to ensure that development is safe and properly regulated whenever we are developing in the floodplain or adjacent to our wetlands, and also identifying areas that we expect to be severely impacted by climate change and sea level rise. This was a slide just to show that the City of Savannah does currently have standards that are consistent with the National Flood Insurance Program, and it requires that buildings be elevated above the base flood elevation to ensure that living quarters, to the greatest extent possible, are not flooded should there be an event. This is also the Coastal Georgia Stormwater Supplement, which staff has referred to for the purpose of evaluating future site plans as they come in, ensuring, recommending that this board ensure that best management practices are incorporated in terms of development for the site. Also, we are looking at the site's V2 rating system for understanding restrictions that should be put on development, requirements that should be put in place to ensure that people are safe, and obviously that the site maintains its compatibility adjoining wetlands and the river corridor. Finally, with that, MPC staff does recommend approval of the flume request and approval of the rezoning request with the following conditions. Number one, prior to MPC approval of any final master plans, the petitioner shall provide a wetland plan identifying wetlands present on the site and identifying areas proposed to be filled and preserved. I believe the petitioner has brought that back and will present that to you today. And the petitioner will also provide an updated general master plan to reflect that wetland plan. Number two, the site shall not be cleared or graded until wetland-related permitting is finalized. Three, on-site wastewater treatment shall not be permitted. Number four, all specific development plans for tracts within the PD shall be forwarded by MPC staff to the Planning Commission for its approval. So again, you would typically only see site plans that, as you saw in the previous petition, there was the need for a variance. And so that's why that particular site plan was referred to this board. If that variance were not required, staff would have approved that at staff level because it was consistent with all standards. This is kind of waiving that approach and saying each site plan would be brought back in its full form, not just the general master plan that you saw, but a full specific development plan that would include the full stack of all requirements for specific development plans that would be brought back to this board for its approval. And finally, just some notes and considerations that should be made as we're reviewing these. In review of future specific development plans, MPC staff further recommends that this board consider minimum open space required, minimum design standards for stormwater ponds, pervious and impervious surfacing, and the rate of post-development stormwater runoff. These are all things that we currently have minimum standards for. And so given the sensitive environmental context of the site, it would be prudent to likely enhance those standards to ensure safety and that the development is compatible with the sensitive areas that are adjacent to it. And so with that, I am happy to recommend approval and answer any questions that you have.
All right. Is the petitioner here?
Did you have several attachments? Were there attachments put on here? Do you know? That's on.
That was probably the master plan that he was showing.
We'll just leave it. We'll wait to the end of the We'll see that one up there. Okay.
Sorry for the wait. Thank you for the record, Harold Yellen, on behalf of the petitioner for Reno. With me today is Jimmy Collins and Ryan Thompson with Thompson Hutton. Jimmy is the project engineer and Ryan is the landscape architect. I'd like to give a very brief summary of the petition before you today. I know some of you are here today and were not here 2 weeks ago. I'll go as quickly as I can to give more time to Jimmy and Ryan for their presentation. The property is approximately 160 acres in size. It is located on Old River Road, and it is, in fact, directly across the street from the entrance to the Savannah Chatham Manufacturing Center. The property is currently zoned RA under the Chatham County Zoning Ordinance, and we are requesting to be rezoned to a PD, a planned designation, under the city's zoning ordinance. And that's if and only if we are annexed into the city of Savannah. And our petition specifically states that it is subject to annexation. We did have several meetings with MPC staff prior to filing the petition, as we often do. And I think we determined collectively that a planned development governed by the City of Savannah zoning ordinance made the most sense. And as we now try to do, we haven't always done this, but as we now try and do, when we create a PD, we incorporate as much of NUZO as possible into the terms and conditions of the PD. PDs have been encouraged by staff for larger tracts, like Eastern Wharf that you just saw in an earlier petition, Hopeton Landing, Fairground, numerous others. As staff pointed out in its staff report, PDs are designed to achieve a mix of uses and design and development standards unique to the property. And as noted by staff, and I'm going to quote because I couldn't have said it better, PDs ensure orderly and thorough planning and review procedures that will result in a cohesive development. Our proposed PD is called the Riverside PD. Our PD does exactly what it is that staff wanted it to do. It establishes a variety of housing types, lot sizes, densities, non-residential uses. And as you can see from the master plan that's up on the screen, we have a majority of the site is residential. And because governed by the City of Savannah zoning ordinance, there will be a perimeter buffer along Old River Road, perimeter buffer adjoining properties to the south. There'll be 8.7 acres of open space and almost 60 acres of aquatic resources and wetland protection. The last item I would like to share with you before Jimmy and Ryan come forward is that we do believe this is an ideal site for this proposed development, and we believe it will address what staff called, and I'm going to quote them again, an urgent need for additional housing in this area. Not to be confused with the housing across from Eastern Wharf in that area. We're talking about housing and an urgent need for this area. We do not expect this development to happen tomorrow. We're actually optimistic that this will be done in phases over the next 9 to 10 years. And in fact, when we scheduled our meeting with the neighborhood, one of the primary concerns that I heard was, what's going to happen when all this comes in year one? Not going to happen. That will absolutely never happen. During the next 9 to 10 years, we will be working with the city and the county and CETA that owns the manufacturing center across the street, and with our neighbors. And perhaps most importantly, we will also be working with MPC staff and with you. We don't get our zoning and we're done. We're going to come back time and time again for site plan review. So it's important for everyone to know this is not our last stop. This is actually our first stop. At the last meeting, even though this is a zoning, and I tried at the end of last meeting to say, folks, we're going outside of our lanes and talking about a lot of site plan issues, but that's all right. The more informed we are, the better decisions we can make. The petition before you today is solely zoning. Does the PD Riverside that we presented to you, does it make sense for future growth? And we say that it does. But there were questions, and if I took notes correctly, there were three specific issues for us to address today: wetlands, floodplain, and density. If I may, Ms. Jarrett, I will turn this over to the engineers who can far better respond to those issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Ryan Thompson, landscape architect with Thomas & Hutton. Mr. Jimmy Collins will be up in a bit to talk about the drainage and the flood zone mapping related to the project. First, I'd just like to say thank you for an opportunity to come back and add some additional color to the request. I saw that we were trying to open the PDFs there. I didn't see where they popped up. Were we able to open the PDFs? I'm nervous to hit the machine here. That's what it. You just click on them. Okay. All right. So the first item I would like to address is the wetlands mapping. I tried to explain this a bit last time, but I know I probably didn't do that very successfully. But we have done some additional, much beyond the NWI's floodland NWI mapping, and we RLC. Resource Land Consultants has actually done an assessment package for the wetlands on this site. It looks at things such as soil types, topography, the flood zone information, NWI information, and through that process, it works through in infrared mapping as well. Through that process, you work through and they create the initial wetland assessment mapping. If you see the wetlands that we're showing on this map, the areas that are these fingers and a couple of other areas, those didn't show up on the NWI mapping that was presented previously, the green areas that are kind of the swamp areas that are of the Ogeechee River there. So our current master plan, I know one of the conditions was that the master plan come back at the time that the wetlands mapping is complete. And this wetlands mapping is not complete. It has to go through a series of processes and steps through the Corps of Engineers, which is a process that we absolutely agree to. And one of the conditions that are placed there of the property going through that process, we recognize it has to and will go through that process. But we have already planned based off of this information. We planned some of the open space areas around those. You'll notice actually on the master plan as well, an open space area that's outside of the wetland area that's down in this area. So we currently are planning based off of the wetlands situation there, and we will commit to continuing to do so as the wetlands process evolves through a final jurisdictional determination. The other item I'm going to address is the density item of the three items. Like I said, Mr. Jimmy Collins will come up and address the drainage and the floodplain mapping situation. But we have gone back and internally reviewed the density, and we did debate it a bit, but at the end of the day, we do feel justified in the request of the density that we're asking for. And I would like to go through a few justifications for those. First, as Harold mentioned, and you know, staff did a great job that this is with the existing development pattern in the area, the only option is septic serve low density residential that in itself immediately precludes a couple of the goals there, even the riverkeeper's goals related to on-site sewage treatment through septic and such. This project being the fact that we will annex into the city of Savannah, we will be tying into a controlled sanitary sewer system, controlled growth. We are able to plan that and much better address the environmental issues related to on-site water and sewer. The second item is, you know, one of the things that popped up last time that that I wish we had this map, so I'm glad we've got this map to show, is there was the concern of the vast loss of tree canopy that this site was going to have a dense multifamily development. This site actually was cleared sometime between 1999 and 2005. There was an exhibit we provided, but I don't know that it made it in the package. But we just did some aerial reconnaissance through the beauty of aerial photography. And sometime around 20 years ago, the site was cleared. I'm assuming it was for agricultural purposes of some other nature. But it has remained in that state, if you track throughout, for the last 20 years. So I'm confident in saying that we will end up through the requirements of the city of Savannah from our tree canopy coverage requirement. Once we're annexed in and developed, we'll have a much higher diversity of tree species through the planting plans and such that we'll create related to this project. So I hope that that precludes the concern of like a deforestation related to the proposed density that we're requesting, because it's actually ideal from a scenario standpoint that there will be very minimal tree canopy that will be removed. Another point is, you know, there was a reference to the suburban residential district, and I know that the density that's there is 3 to 5 units to the acre, but I would offer that that's looking at that entire character, right? Inside that district and inside its own language, it does say suburban residential character areas include low and medium density residential development. Generally, this character area features either single family structures or large lot, medium lot residential subdivisions. If it ended there, I would say we don't conform with that. However, the very next sentence is, however, multifamily apartments and attached single family residential subdivisions are also prevalent in the area. And the final closing piece, which we're proud of that we think this project will really be able to offer, is that its alternative types of housing should be encouraged in the suburban areas to accommodate multi-generational households, seniors, and others. And obviously this is a unique and different housing type that is provided in that area. We think it is a perfect scenario from the standpoint of the employment center that is directly across the street. But also we're within 8 miles of the other major employment center of the area, the Meta plant. We are one exit from it now, and we will be even one exit closer when the additional interchange is built for the plant. And finally, I'd just like to touch on how it aligns with a few of the other plans that have been discussed. I mean, obviously we've already talked about the location of its adjacency to the job growth and the manufacturing centers that are in the area. You know, the 2020 flume map, we are amending it, but only a very, very small portion. But you know, we're very well aligned. And the little small portion that's down here in the corner that's see if I can make the reference correctly there. It was the planned residential corridor district. I would offer the plan we're proposing provides
the corridor.
Planned river corridor. Sorry about that. I apologize. I have taken notes too quickly. We'll be providing a much greater area than what that zoning actually covers right now. With our master plan, you can see the area that we're identifying both as the areas of protection of the identified wetlands areas as well as the open space areas that we're planning adjacent to those. And the final point is, you know, there is a obvious recognized need for housing in not just Savannah, but the region as a whole, the country as a whole, really. There's a recent housing study that's out that, again, it's a regional study, and it shows an 8-year deficit of 17,626 units. That's a little over 2,000 units per year that are needed. And I mentioned regional, but that's not the regional need. That's the need that was identified in Chatham County alone. So that is, we feel like, this area, the location of where it is, the ability for workers to be close to their jobs, live close to their jobs, have a commercial component that'll allow for some lunch visits from the center as well as the residents there. We just feel it's ideal from the standpoint of the land use compatibility. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Jimmy Collins to talk a bit about the floodplain and drainage.
Thank you, Ryan, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission. I'm Jim Collins with Thomas and Hutton. The property that is proposed for rezoning and annexation, as we discussed at the previous meeting, is 100% in the FEMA-designated 100-year floodplain. There is an ordinance, assuming that we're annexed into the city, that directs how development is intended to take place within the floodplain. And there's some fairly robust standards in there that will require a detailed and complex hydraulic and hydrologic analysis by us and reviewed by the city. The three major provisions of that ordinance, which was recently updated in October and went into effect this year, is that all structures are required to be 2 feet above the base flood elevation. For this particular site, as I mentioned at the initial meeting, we're between elevation 25 and 26 with the 100-year base flood elevation. So the city's ordinance will require all structures to be 2 feet above that, which will be elevation 27 to 28. In addition to that, there's a volumetric floodplain mitigation requirement, which mandates that for any volume of fill that is placed in the floodplain on site, an equal volume must be removed. Thirdly, in addition to that, we have to perform the complex and detailed study that will demonstrate this project will not cause any rise in the 100-year stage elevation within the floodplain and the Ogeechee River. And we were asked to prepare an analysis, and we will do that. That will be at a later date. It's a very time-consuming and kind of an iterative process, but that will be done. What I thought would be helpful, and Ms. Joanne was kind enough to send some photos of the flooding that took place during Hurricane Debbie, is to look at that event, because it was certainly a historic event. It was the highest recorded stage elevation at Morgan's Bridge. It was the third highest stage elevation recorded at Dasher's Landing, which is at Highway 80. I think the previous, which was 99 years ago, was about 4 feet higher than what we saw there. So definitely a historic event. But, if you recall, when the hurricane came in August, we began seeing rain August 5th. It lasted for a little over three days, ending early in the morning of August 8th. And if you look at the, upper right-hand portion of this exhibit, what we've shown is the watershed of the Ogeechee River. And, that particular area that's shaded in blue is where most of the intense rainfall came with the hurricane over the course of those 3 days. Again, a little bit longer than 3 days as it approached the northwestern portion of the watershed. And those were some historic amounts of rainfall. But if you notice the shape of that, it almost looks like a funnel. And the flooding that we saw between Dasher's Landing and at Morgan's Bridge was primarily a result of the rainfall that fell in the upper portions of that watershed. And of course, there was rainfall that fell in Bryan and Chatham County. If you look here, you can see there's a very small percentage of Chatham County that's within the watershed. As we discussed the previous meeting, there's the easterly portion. If you go back off of Old River Road into the manufacturing park, drains into the Little Ogeechee River. But we do have some pretty significant portions of Bryan County. But you can look at some of these rainfalls that we saw, double-digit rainfalls that came into that basin. And what that did was flow downstream into the Ogeechee River through tributaries, taking some time to approach Dasher's Landing in Morgan's Bridge. So the rainfall ended early the morning of August 8th. The river had not reached its maximum stage at that point. It reached its maximum stage when, and it was August 10th, 2 days later, a little over 2 days later, at those two locations, when that runoff that fell in the upper regions of the watershed got in the Ogeechee River and made its way down. So that was the historic flooding that we saw. Over the course of the 3 days in the lower portions of the basin, certainly there was some impact in the river. Most of that runoff made its way downstream, out towards King's Ferry, where there was significant flooding seen. Again, that flooding took place August 11th when the river staged up at that point. However, a lot of what we saw there, I would say, resulted from the Ogeechee River staging up, but also the Canoochee River, which is where Sterling Canal ties into. So you saw some of that in Richmond Hill. So I just wanted to go through, again, we will do a detailed analysis. We couldn't do it in 2 weeks, but I wanted to kind of go over what caused some of the historic flooding that we've seen and also point out the provisions of the city's flood damage prevention ordinance that we must adhere to. We cannot cause any impact to the floodplain. It's mandated, and that will be reviewed by the city. And we do develop in the floodplain. That is the whole intent of having that ordinance. That concludes our team's presentation. We're happy to take any questions you might have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there questions for the applicant or staff? Go ahead, Mr. Melder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for Mr. Morrow. You mentioned in your presentation, I was wondering if you could expound on it a little bit. You said you described flagpole development as being inefficient. Can you talk about what flagpole development is and why it's inefficient?
Sure. So essentially, this is a pattern where folks will have perhaps the initial buyer. They'll have a piece of property, and there will be a portion of the property at the rear or on the side or something of that nature where they will want to subdivide it and sell it off. And what typically happens is that the entry from or the access to the public road that was created for that one parcel then begins to serve one, two, or more parcels that were created off of that parent parcel. And the issue is that as you develop those, many times as they're sold, you know, two or three, you know, owners down the road, there are questions about who's required to maintain those. There's usually issues with getting adequate surfacing. If you have emergency vehicles that need to get back to them, they're usually irregular in terms of their width and their stability, and so you have problems with emergency vehicles finding and servicing their properties. There are just a number of unfortunate sort of things that tend to happen when you don't have coordinated development, as in a PD or a subdivision. So.
Thank you. When this came up at the last NPC meeting, you made a comment, and you can correct me if I'm getting your paraphrasing wrong, but essentially that, you know, this was an opportunity to show how development could be done well in flood-prone areas as opposed to other examples in our past, I'm sure. Could you – that had just been intriguing me for the last 3 weeks. Could you talk a little bit about, like, what you meant by that and what is – does this development, I mean, you've, there's a recommendation from approval, but from your perspective, you know, how does that meet that mark? Can you tell us a little bit more about the comment you made 3 weeks ago?
Sure. So staff that you all don't see all the time, we have a couple of subject matter folks that get into things like environmental planning. You do occasionally hear from Anna. She's here today, and so I'll point her out. Jackie Jackson, who's currently with the county. Many of you are familiar with her work. They are working on our regulations that are related to kind of the fact that we are coastally situated, and obviously the climate is causing sea level rise and weather that is unpredictable. And so obviously in the face of these changing circumstances, we have to have regulations that respond to these new threats. We unfortunately are in a coastal region, and so we're not necessarily getting more land. We just have to figure out how to use the land that we do have differently. And so in order to support that, we do have grants that we've received from the Georgia Environmental Protection Agency for the purpose of evaluating and updating our ordinances in order to support development in sensitive areas like this. So I'll just point these two items out. The Coastal Incentive Grant Program that was for upgrading our development ordinances, and also another one for SLAM, which is essentially going to look at how sea level rise is going to further take away, quote unquote, take away developable land from us. And so it's kind of with issues like this in mind that I think we face opportunities to say, you know, these are obviously areas where we don't want to imperil people, but we also have to balance property rights. And so when we're taking the lead of, say, the federal government in particular, and we are basing things like our flood insurance on their guidance, this boards like this, this is the place where you can take current circumstances where we're seeing flooding. If we don't see any development in these areas, we are likely to only continue to see what the current state is. But it is through petitions like that that we're seeing now where we can test sort of what our regulations are going to do. We can see where we are going to be able to sort of work with developers to meet the challenges and things of that nature. And not only that, we can draw attention to places where we need greater community infrastructure to address specific infrastructure needs, in particular handling of stormwater in an area like this. So I think it's only through additional future development that we will address the current state that may be deficient in some areas we're experiencing problems of this nature. Yes.
Can you talk more about those recommendations?
So essentially, there's always a commitment from the developer to meet whatever the current minimum standards are. That's a prerequisite for development. There were a couple of inclusions from staff here, specifically references to the Coastal Stormwater Supplement and also the site's V2 rating system, because these are essentially, this is the kind of knowledge that we're getting out of our universities and peer-reviewed journals as we go through developing and coping with the effects of development. Staff is hoping that looking at each of these individual site plans is an opportunity to kind of look at, many of you are familiar with like LEED. You know, you would take a building through a LEED process to ensure that it's sustainable. It is the same thing, but when we look at a site, to understand and set performance standards that are more appropriate for sites that are compromised in some sense. And again, this is not generally applicable. These are sites that are constrained by very specific things. And so this is an opportunity in staff's opinion to kind of look at sites V2 and also to look at the Coastal Stormwater Supplement and the best management practices that it promotes and incorporate those into this development to kind of bolster or, you know, bump up whatever our minimums are in places where we feel it's appropriate to achieve a higher quality of development.
And so to be clear, you feel that this development exceeds some of those standards where you feel that they should exceed those standards?
I think with as proposed, obviously the proposal is to meet the current minimums.
Yeah, okay.
We think that through working with this board and looking at each individual site plan as it comes in, there are some adjustments that can be made with the guidance of these supplemental materials to make it more appropriate for the site.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Other questions? Go ahead, Ms. Amick.
Mr. Morrow, As I understand, and I want to clarify this, the current zoning for this 159 acres is RA.
Yes.
And that allows two single family homes per acre?
It's complicated. So the county's subdivision standards are dependent on how much land is required to have a septic tank and replacement field. And so I would say the range that's appropriate is going to be somewhere between 15,000 square feet and 1 acre. It could be more than 1 acre if the Chatham County Health Department determines that that's necessary in order to accommodate the replacement drain field. And so roughly, I would say 1 acre is what it typically comes out to. But
which means 159 homes.
Theoretically, yes.
And this project is... the zoning for it would take it to
1,650.
Yeah, 1,665 dwelling units.
The petitioner is requesting a ceiling, an upward limitation of 1,665
units. Is there some sort of zoning that is in between what's currently there, which is obviously very limiting, and something not quite as grand as the PD?
The benefit of a plan development is that it gives this board the opportunity to say, do we have anything that we can grab onto as a guide that would suggest to us what may be most appropriate? Again, the petitioner has the right to come in and request, and it's in this very forum that we're to discuss the policy documents and what they may say about appropriateness.
So if we said there's a definite need for affordable housing, but we want it to be residential, because there is that need. We don't want the commercial component. We can designate that?
That is a recommendation that you can make to City Council.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, Mr. Kegler.
And just for clarification, we're addressing the drainage, and that may or may not be adequate, but looking at traffic, and that's an issue I have with the manufacturing site, and when these units are built out, and I understand it's going to be a number of years before, maybe 5 to 10 years before it's built out. How do we address the traffic issues on over a road?
So typically in the course of any development, a developer is usually only responsible for what's fronting their site, whatever touches their site. Sometimes off-site improvements are negotiated. And so obviously there could be some sort of intergovernmental agreement, about improvements off-site that would be appropriate. But in terms of the broader traffic network, it's unlikely that this specific petition would be the appropriate place to discuss those particular improvements.
And then the other issue, on one side of the road right now, it's City Savannah. And the other side is currently county, but the city, their petitioner will be requesting that the other side be annexed in.
That is correct.
Currently, the stand now, if they don't get the annexation, it'll require a curb cut from the county. That's what I understand.
That is correct, yes, sir.
All right. So, and unless there are, plans to make improvements over a road, I'm not sure how that's going to fly. And I would really request that the petitioner sit down with county engineering staff and city staff to address those issues.
Other questions? Comments?
Mr. Mara, I have a question. On the NOAA slide, when you're talking about the grants, will this development be subject to those standards? Like, when will we know what comes back from SLAM and what comes back from NOAA with these grant programs to say what the standards are that should be applied to developments that are in the floodplain? Will we have that information to put conditions on this development at the time when it comes back
So the benefit of having these updates is that they become the standard and the norm for everyone. You still have the ability as the Planning Commission to place those recommendations as this goes off to City Council. So it doesn't necessarily have to be completed just yet for you to still add additional requirements. But I'll let Anna actually speak a little bit more to what's expected.
And pardon me, but while before Anna gets up to talk, I mean, there's two things that I want to make sure that you all are clear about. One, you're looking at a project that is located in the county. That's why you had the lower density that you mentioned, Ms. Amick, and that is proposed to be annexed into the city, which would support higher density. So just keep that in mind. The second thing is that if you're concerned about some of the environmental issues that Anna's going to talk about, you can always make a specific request that that those sites come back to this board just to make sure that whatever the proposed changes are being looked at or addressed or whatever, for like we've done on other projects that have come to this board as part of the rezoning. You've got two actions you're doing. You're doing a Flume amendment and you're doing a rezoning. So you've got a choice, is what I'm saying, to make sure that you're addressing some of the concerns that you're raising.
Hi, Anna Brown-Markle McQuarrie, staff planner. So the Integrating Climate Action Coastal Incentive Grant is through Chatham County. However, it's for City of Savannah and Chatham, unincorporated Chatham County zoning ordinances. That is currently ongoing. The program manager is Jackie Jackson with Chatham County, and they have public engagement events this summer. That grant is wrapping up, I believe, at the end of this year. And it will be a set of recommendations on how to update ordinances. It will not be, nobody's adopting anything, but ideally it's a template, for the jurisdictions to look at, and modify as needed or update their own ordinances. And then, the MPC's Coastal Incentive Grant, was accepted, and that's to include the sea level affecting marshes model, RSLAM, data. If that grant, if it's accepted into NOAA's budget, which we'll know in August, would theoretically start October 1st and then wrap up the following year. So it would wrap up in 2026. And this grant is a proposal to include marsh migration data into the comprehensive plan. So we will see it in the comp plan process, which will be happening over the next year.
Thank you. Anything else, Ms. Wilson?
A question. I understand that this is a request to be annexed into the city, and the city may have different densities for for a PD, or the density might look different within the city. But I do want to, and if you could clarify, they're asking to be annexed into an area that is all county suburban residential. They are surrounded by, yes, and that would be a great pick. So there are annexing in directly across from the Savannah Manufacturing Center, but they are surrounded by north, east, south, all county suburban, suburban residential. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a few questions. Actually, for probably, we'll start. Well, I'll just throw it out there. The first question I have is, why the riverside of the road? Why are we choosing to develop in this floodplain? Cheaper?
No, to answer the question, cheaper, no, ma'am, this is not going to be cheaper. That's one of the reasons why, from a standpoint of the density discussion, we recognize that it's to do the things that Jimmy talked about doing that we'll have to do related to floodplain mitigation, things related to how we have to construct these units, it will not be cheaper. It is, from a standpoint of one, it's not busted up yet with a lot of flag lot development that it would take to put a lot of lots back together to make a substantial project. Okay. The areas on the other side of, on the other, well, one, another limiting factor is to the north, it was a different jurisdiction. So if we were there, we would be in front of Effingham and not the city or county. And then from a standpoint of the other side of the road, well, directly across is, as I mentioned, has already been developed with flag lots and suburban residential. And then there is some other properties around, and we have studied some of them. There's some constraints related to those as well. This piece by far related to the concern about wetlands and the contiguousness of the uplands that are around, surrounded by those wetlands, by far has the best pieces of upland available to be able to be utilized for a development like we're proposing.
Okay. There is existing road flooding that occurs not related to Debbie, is my understanding. My understanding is when CETA came in, the hydrology of the area changed a good bit. I understand that there are septic tanks that are full of water now rather than sewage, or sewage and water, I guess you would say. And the roads flood on a more regular interval, and that areas that were always dry are now not always dry. So the hydrology has obviously changed, and I don't think it's just climate change that's done that. Can we talk about how we can avoid further impacting the residents that live out there and have for a long time?
Well, I'll certainly let Jimmy speak to the expertise on that. I will say that the areas you're talking about, this project drains into the Ogeechee and not the Little Ogeechee Basin, which dramatically improves our drainage situation related to where the conveyance of the outfall of a typical storm event will go.
You read my mind. We will have, I call it direct conveyance. We don't cross any other watershed, but obviously we're going to have to meet water quantity, retention, detention, and stormwater quality requirements prior to discharging, but we cross no other properties with our conveyance to the Ogeechee.
How are you going to manage to keep that water level the same?
Through the provisions of the flood damage prevention ordinance, which will impact the amount of property and uplands that can be developed on the site. Areas will have to be excavated, and we'll have to run a flood analysis to ensure, again, it's a provision of the ordinance, that we're not raising the 100-year stage elevation of the Ogeechee River.
So the 100-year, what about the 25-year, four-hour?
Which would be the requirements of the road system internally. But because we're in 100-year floodplain, we have to convey the 100-year storm. If we weren't, it would just be the 25-year storm. But that will be the interior road requirements.
Okay. Can we get to the road issues? I heard Mr. Kegler say that there was going to need to be a permit to connect to the county road, and that may be problematic.
Well, we have to, we're in the process of the traffic impact analysis, and we've got a couple of projects similar to this. So yes, we're going to have to meet with county and city engineering departments once we have the traffic impact assessment complete and we have a better understanding of what our impacts are going to be.
Does our traffic impact assessment look at the intersectional issues only?
It will look at the impacts for the ingress and egress to our property, as well as go back to drainage, upstream and downstream. We will look at other intersections.
Okay. sewer lines. That's my last thing for you. So the sewer lines, my guess is that you're going to install sewer throughout your development, and then you're going to install a pump and force main it past the residents that are having problems with their septic systems now, correct?
Yes, essentially that's correct. We would put in a station to serve the project that would pump. We haven't worked all that out now, because we don't know exactly where the roads are going to be, but I would imagine, we'd have gravity sewers that tie into that. And then we'd have a force main that would cross Old River Road into the manufacturing park where there's a lift station just past the lake there.
Okay. Finally, when you build the force main and the sewers, are you going to decide to put the force main at a certain elevation and build the land up on top of the force main? I know that right now there's a problem out there because the force main that was installed for, yeah, probably the manufacturing center is higher than the ground elevation had to be raised to give the cover over the force main. And that has created an impediment to the downstream drainage or to the upstream drainage going downstream.
The way I believe we would approach this is, and again, we've got to have this drainage analysis complete, the no-rise study, the volumetric mitigation done. And it really is an iterative process because it's a little bit of trial and error. But once we have that nailed down, we would have a mass grading plan. And that would be the first step before any utilities are installed, would be to grade the site, obviously with proper soil erosion sedimentation control measures in place so that we don't have that situation that you just described.
Okay, and you're obviously going to have to get some kind of easement to put in the force main and tie to the...
That's correct.
And when you do the force main design, will you be looking at the grade there to make sure that we're not increasing the grade of the ground level?
Yes.
Okay. One final thing. As far as the... now it's slipping my mind. Oh, my goodness. I cannot recall. I'm guessing that Mr. Kegler is going to have to give you an easement to cross Old River Road to get to the corporate site, the industrial site.
As it exists now, it's county right of way, so yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
I have a question for Ryan.
Yes.
I kind of, want to know a little bit more about, I know that y'all looked at the other site, across the way, for River Ridge, and you were looking at that, and you just said that there were problems with that. And I want to know what the constraints and the problems were with that site.
Well, I would just say it wasn't like our, from a design team standpoint, choice. There were multiple things, one related to the total yield. We are asking for 1,600 units. I think with both sites combined, it was going to be close to double that, I believe. When we initially met with the city, there was a little concern about the availability in a relatively short term, the 10-year time frame to provide the water and sewer demand for that. So we studied which site would be the best piece that we thought was for the development style and for the reasons we talked about, from a lack of wetland constraints on this piece, it just rose to the top pretty quickly.
So the wetlands on this piece were better than the wetlands on the other piece?
There are significantly fewer wetlands that are between, well, I guess we're not looking at the actual wetland map. But take, for instance, this, the only wetlands that are additional to this green are just a couple of fingers that create substantial upland areas, yes, ma'am, that are available from a development standpoint.
Okay. So, and that's the conclusion that I came to, is that
this and from what was maybe mentioned in the community meeting that the there was substantial less wetlands that were problematic drainage and wetlands on the other site.
Just in kind of completely different situation too, related to the what we just talked about, right? Even a different drainage area, right, from the standpoint of where it is draining. You know, granted, we obviously have to work with the county and the city related to access, but you know, the site had a lot of frontage on Older Road as well. It makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. We can plan it to be interconnected. We can plan it to have, you know, interconnected right at the main entry to the plant, that we thought made a huge amount of sense related to you've got traffic that's going to be there. If we can add residential that takes 5, 10, 100, 1,000 people that don't have to drive Old River Road every day to go to the plant and they live in this development, it's going to help the situation on traffic on the Old River Road. So we really felt like this was a great spot for housing related to the need for manufacturing.
And you just said something about the frontage there. And on the little plan that I saw, are y'all keeping commercial up on the frontage? Is that?
Yes, ma'am. We get to that. The only area commercial is allowed is in the area that's kind of in this burnt orange color.
And that is going to remain that there will be commercial there.
Well, we're allowing for it. We don't know how much commercial. We projected up to 50,000 square feet. So we chose a district that would allow a variability to allow for residential as well as commercial there.
I mean, I'm just your point in, you know, keeping everybody off the road. And if there are things that, you know, could service that PUD commercially, you know, with sandwiches, lunch, whatever service that community, that's what I'm interested in knowing.
That is exactly why we wanted to include that.
Okay.
You know, Jimmy mentioned the TI is being performed. Commercial is typically your biggest driver. We're working, you know, in that process. Like this is not highway commercial. This is commercial specifically for the existing and for what we're proposing and for what the manufacturing center. There's other more intense nodes in the area, if you will, the areas of around the interstate and around 204. It's going to be that more highway oriented commercial. So this commercial, to be successful, just from a standpoint of business sets, it's going to have to be focused on the workers in the manufacturing center, as well as the people that live in this community, as well as the surrounding community.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have one last question for Mr. Collins. My understanding is that the county has the definitive hydrologic and hydraulic plan for West Chatham County at this point in time, that they have done a study and their engineers are using that study as they look at plans for that area. Would you be willing to, and would the city be amenable to allowing the county engineering to review the drainage design?
Well, as I understand it, the study is just an existing conditions model. There's been some discussion about, you know, what future land use studies or plans, comprehensive plans, may be incorporated into that to look at the future impact. We're going to be meeting with the county because we have, access issues that we have to work out with them because that's a county maintained road. I you know, would not be in their jurisdiction, but we're happy to meet with them to discuss it for sure.
Mr. Kegler, would that be a possibility?
Certainly.
Mr. Melder, would you be amenable to that?
I'm sure we would be. No issue with that at all.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? I do have some speaker cards. Please excuse me if I mess up your name. Joanne Cottle. I messed it up.
Oh, you did good this time.
Okay.
The easiest way is bottle with a C.
Okay.
And I am Joanne Cottle. Y'all know me by now, Huckleberry Road. And I'm here just to kind of reiterate the community's concerns, listening.
You have 3 minutes, I'm sorry.
And jotting down my notes. A couple of things that have happened. Traffic, since our last meeting, I personally know of two more accidents, one as of yesterday at that particular intersection of 204 and Old River Road. I'm sure there's been more, but that's just how frequently they happen. So that is a concern. Facilities out there, I'm sure y'all have seen on the news with a little five-year-old, little boy, which breaks my heart, drowned in a little pond out there. All these little patches are getting annexed into Savannah. I'm part of that surrounding unincorporated Chatham County. Savannah could not get there to respond. Pooler had to come in and respond to that call. And the more that it's annexed into Savannah, more and more of that's going to happen. Fire stations, we have one little station on 204. The next one is over in Bloomingdale. But yet all of this in New Hampstead, all of Riverside, okay, they're going from single family to multi-dwelling. They can just go up higher. The buildings aren't going to change, but you can put more people in a higher building. And that's back to the concerns of traffic, the schools, the facilities, first responders. We just don't have it out there. And yet they keep bringing it and people and people and people. I understand a need and I know it's got to come, but something's got to be done before all of these people are brought out there. It's just not an acceptable or feasible thing to happen. And Mr. Yellen's comment about our community meeting, and I said it here the last time, it may be 10 years pattern, but it's not going to be any different than if it finished up next year. The final outcome is going to be the same. All I think everybody's hoping for is that we all just adjust to it and accept it, and we keep getting pushed and pushed and pushed.
30 seconds left.
So, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Connie Shreve.
Thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Connie Shreve, and I'm speaking on behalf of a couple of different organizations. One of them is Ogeechee Outpost, because that's my livelihood, and I have not been able to rent a canoe in many years. Okay, the river will go down, it'll come right back up. I do not rent boats if it's over 6 foot. It's not safe. That's one thing. Today, the river's at 10 foot, and it's just now cresting. It's on my riverbank at Morgan's Bridge. So years ago, they changed all of the levels to say whether it was moderate, minor, major. And they say at 10 foot, take action. At 10 foot, it's already flooded, and it's coming across the trails at Savannah-Ogeechee Canal. So I'm also here on behalf of the canal. But at my home, I know the river's changed. I have summer camp in the summer. We can go to a sandbar one summer with the kids. The next year, that sandbar won't be there, okay? I know that this property in question for rezoning was originally called Buck's Bluff, and it's there's no bluff there anymore because it's a very, very fast curve, okay? If I bring people down the river, I always give them a heads up before I even get there, okay, because it's big, it's wide, and it's very fast, even if the water's low. Okay, that's one thing. I know generationally that historic piece of property where moonshining used to be done back in the past, it's sad that that land would now even be looked at like this. My hopes are that the Chatham County Metropolitan Planning Commission, the City of Savannah, and Chatham County will all step up, no matter what the wetlands laws are, and make ours better, better than the minimum best management practices that can be followed. I know that since Hyundai went in, we got flooded and the waters never went down. Okay. I know United States Geological Survey said they were scratching their heads trying to figure out where the water's coming from. There are 67 discharges in the Ogeechee River, and y'all need to know each and every one of them before you even allow anybody to live on the river. We need to talk about all of those discharges. But the river has come up, and it has not hardly gone down. The Savannah Ogeechee Canal was hit hard in August. Mr. Jay Melder, I know you know we got flooded, but in that last meeting, you said you weren't aware that Savannah Ogeechee Canal had a problem. Our whole building was gutted.
Thank you, ma'am. Sorry.
We're partners with the city of Savannah.
Yes, ma'am, I understand. I'm just asking the question. I was not
aware. We're partners with y'all.
I was not aware of any structural flooding within the city of Savannah. Was that structural flooding within the city of Savannah?
The canal is owned by the city, the whole 16 miles of canal.
I understand
there was
that.
Flooding up and down Savannah Ogeechee Canal in different areas. But the city owns the whole canal.
I understand that. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting me speak, even though I got cut off and didn't say half of what I needed to.
3 minutes is where we are. And I have Hal Robinson online.
Hello, this is Hal Robinson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Georgia-Alabama Land Trust. That's one hat. And the other is I'm also the Program Director for the Land Trust, our REPI program with Fort Stewart. REPI is formerly known as the ACUB, the buffering project with Fort Stewart. So, you know, this property, and I don't know that I'm able to share a map showing the boundary from my screen. If I'm able to, I will. But I have a map just kind of showing the boundary of Fort Stewart. The REPI program is authorized by federal statute 10 U.S.C. 2684A, and it provides for what's called a priority area, an area within which it's been identified by Fort Stewart and all the governments, local governments on this call many years ago, to be an area that is identified to not develop, specifically because of concerns about noise, vibration, smoke, all sorts of things. And this property is within that boundary. You know, we've protected, around 50, 60, 70,000 acres from the various partners within this corridor. It's actually a very narrow corridor. In that area, it only goes from the river to River Road and Highway 204. So this property represents the entire width of the buffer in that area. It's an area that also is in close proximity to an aerial gunnery range. So, you know, this is one of those things. The whole point of this program is to get ahead because, you know, it's just speculation, but I'd say it's pretty likely that, you know, members of this group, you know, years down the road, you're going to be the ones with complaints with people about why is there a 1,000-unit development where their house is shaking, where they, you know, could be impacts from vibration to their house. There are going to be complaints there. And in turn, you're going to have complaints back to Fort Stewart. Why are they training? And the whole point of this program is to ensure the existence of Fort Stewart, really, that they can train when they want and within their own property in a compatible use buffer. So, you know, this is, I see you're looking for the Sentinel landscape, and that'll show this as well. So if you look, the Sentinel landscape is a larger area, but if you zoom in, I can still kind of talk, you know, you through this.
And, your time is almost up.
Well, yeah, I'm happy, though. Just know if there's any questions, you know, see that area with the hashed marks. If you scroll down just to look at Fort Stewart, if you can scroll down a little bit, Up right there. Okay. That northeast corner right there. Yep. Right where that little hashed area is to the east of Fort Stewart. That's the minimal buffer area that everybody's already agreed, you know, we shouldn't develop for a compatible use. And this property lies within that area, you know, so I'd be happy to talk if anyone has more questions about it and provide maps, but, and that's entirely separate from the sensitive ecological impact, I mean, which we could talk about for hours, but, yeah, that's it. If you have questions, I'd be happy to talk with anyone more about it. Thank you.
If you'll stay online, please.
Stay online, please.
Can we silence him for right now, mute him for right now? Mr. Morrow, were you aware of this?
Somewhat, yes. So what I can say is
I recall seeing something from Fort Stewart talking about dust. I was not aware that vibrations were going to be a problem.
Absolutely. I'd say this is relatively common. Adjoining any military installation, there are a series of disclaimers that are ideally given to residents that are going to move into the area. We locally have had some conversations about how it is that we get real estate brokers and agents in particular to disclose this to potential buyers that they are living within proximity of an area where they would experience noise and vibrations and potentially smoke and particulate matter.
Mr. Milder, were you aware of it?
No, ma'am.
Are the developers aware of it? Okay. And you think that the residents will be okay with it?
Yes, the current residents are, so will they?
Yes, come up to the microphone, please.
There are current residents right now who have the same impact that our residents will have. It's no different than being next to the Savannah International Airport. It's no different than being next to Fort Stewart. It's our obligation to notify those who purchase or those who rent of what activity is on adjacent property. We do not have an issue with it at all.
Okay. Thank you.
It's really, by the way, it's really more of a disclaimer on the part of the U.S. government.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Yellen, how do y'all do that? How do y'all inform the residents of something like that? And also, will you inform them of that the property is in a flood zone? How do y'all do that?
We can disclose whatever it is that this body or what statute requires that we disclose. I'm not aware of any legal requirement to disclose floodplain. In fact, I was actually a little bit troubled. I'm going to take a moment. When I was at the pre-meeting, I thought I heard this, and if I misunderstood, please forgive me. What I thought I heard was that the city's floodplain mitigation statute requires that a floodplain remain a floodplain and not be developed. That's what I heard, and that's simply not true. That is simply not the case. We develop floodplains everywhere. And in fact, I just read in a shout out to Eric Curl and his online agenda, the city of Savannah is planning to build a police station in a floodplain area, but with certain conditions. There are certain things they have to do to meet their own floodplain ordinance. So I just want to make sure that I'm clear, because what I heard at pre-meeting was you can't build on a floodplain. You can build on a floodplain subject to the city's floodplain mitigation ordinance, which is getting stricter, not less strict. It seems to change every so often. I think Jimmy said it changed October of 2024 by adding another foot to the base flood elevation. So I just want to make that clear. So I'm not aware. I'm not personally aware. There may be other attorneys who are aware of some requirement to disclose. If there is, I'm not aware of it.
Okay, well, I'll respond to that because I was the one that said that, and I pulled it off of the city's website, and I have it right here. It's a City of Savannah Floodplain Mitigation Plan, and it says the action description is reserve vacant low-lying flood-prone wetland areas for open space through acquisition or regulation, and the status is carrying forward, and then it has a description of that. So if I mischaracterized that by what I said, I simply meant that according to the mitigation plan, it does say to reserve flood prone areas open.
And the apology is mine. That may be aspirational. I think that wherever the city can afford, the county can afford to buy large tracts of land, sure they should.
Or leave it in the county.
Let the county buy it then. I don't think the county intends to buy this tract of land, nor do I think the city intends to buy this tract of land purely for floodplain mitigation. But having said that, we do know that there are some very specific rules in the city of Savannah. We have to abide by those or we cannot build. That's just the bottom line. So I hope I've answered that question.
And furthermore, and I would like to just to read into the record, the progress on that, according to the city's website on the plan, is new draft floodplain maps are incrementally removing lowlands from floodplains as base flood elevation levels are lowered, making the goal harder to achieve without writing new regulations. Additionally, the financial strain the city is experiencing has prevented any further acquisition.
That sounds right. No quarrel here.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Any final comments? No more speakers. So I guess I will entertain. I'm sorry. After public comment, that's it. I'll entertain a motion.
I motion that we, I guess, do we need two separate motions for the two separate agenda items?
We do need two separate motions. Let's go for the future land use map first, and we'll come back for
all
the
right.
next.
Stephen Plunk, I'll motion that we grant staff recommendation.
Joe Welch, second.
Can I offer a friendly amendment?
Yes, I am open to amendments on this.
I would amend that to say recommend approval with the condition that all phases will need to demonstrate adequate public facilities, i.e. roads, police, plans for runoff, protection of neighboring subdivisions from flooding, wetlands, plans, et cetera, are in place for each phase.
Can I ask Morrow if that would be a seen nods?
I would say for the future land use map, likely not. If you would like to attach second for the map amendment. Mm-hmm.
Would you like to withdraw your?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
We have a vote.
Yes. For the future land use map amendment, or for the future land use map, yes, amendment. Ms. Amick?
No.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin? Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
No.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
No.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
I'll say no too. All right, now for the map amendment. I'm sorry.
Outcome.
Passes. 7-4. Now for the map amendment, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion that we approve staff recommendation.
Cool. Joe Welch, second.
Okay. Now I would like to add the friendly amendment. Recommend approval of the map amendment with the condition that all phases will need to demonstrate adequate public facilities, including roads, police, plans for runoff, protection of neighboring subdivisions from flooding, wetlands plan, et cetera, be in place at the time.
Ms. Wilson, you think that's appropriately worded?
Yes, that's appropriately worded. I'm assuming that that is in addition to the conditions that staff
the staff recommendation, I'm including all that. Yes, I accept your amendment.
I have a question, if I may. And does that include the changes to the ordinance when we talk about adequate conditions, the changes to the ordinance that is going that ordinances that are going to be required with, I think Mr. Morrow is going to work with city and county to make sure that this new development fits in with where we're trying to go with development in high risk areas.
I don't know if we can do that.
If I could just add, I would say that the benefit of having all site plans approved by this board means that exactly what you've just stated, it must be to your satisfaction. This will not be approved by staff. This will come to this board for approval. So you'll have the ability to be comfortable with it before you say.
Each phase.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right.
Can I make a friendly amendment?
I'm open to it.
Okay. I would like for the density to remain consistent with the policy documents, which would be 3 to 5 units per acre. I would also like to add that there be a joint review to occur for stormwater and roads.
These two separate?
Two separate.
The first one, I'm a no on the density. The second one, what can you go deeper into what you mean by the second one?
A joint review from the county and the city for the county.
They said they would.
You said they already said they would.
But if we put it in the motion, then.
And both managers already expressed approval of that, right? So
it didn't hurt to put it in the motion,
right? I'm fine with the second one. I'm a no on the first one.
Okay,
but you can express an unfriendly amendment.
Okay, let me express an unfriendly in the parking lot. So if we are doubling the density, which the density in that area is 3 to 5 units per acre. I'm saying that if we end up doubling it, which they're wanting 10.
That would be 1,200 to 1,260.
Right. Then I'm thinking we as a board can come up with something that's somewhere in between. The, just from the basis of given the character and taking into the account the residents around there, would you be agreeable to eight units per acre?
It feels like we're getting kind of arbitrary, which I know Mr. Morrow told us to kind of avoid doing that. Mr. Morrow, do you have any input on this?
I would just reiterate my previous claim that you should rely on an adopted policy document.
Like I said, I'm fine with your amendment, your second one, unless we want to, have an unfriendly amendment vote on this.
As a matter of fact, just because I want to make sure there's a lot of stuff going on right now for clarity's sake. One thing just remember is that the density is up to that amount. When they start doing the engineering and stuff, they very well might not get that much density. I mean, a lot of times they can't get as much as they propose at the top amount. So you're probably going to have less than what is recommended. They've got that range, but the bottom line is they're probably not going to get that much in density. And second, I just want to make sure that for our records, we've got real clear understanding of what the motion is. So you can restate your motion. Ms. Jarrett, you can add your amendment, and then whatever it is that you accepted for the next one after Ms. Jarrett, just repeat what was accepted.
So I'd like to restate my motion. I'm motioning that we grant a staff recommendation with all included stipulations. I'm also now adding, would you like to state?
Recommend approval of the map amendment with the condition that all phases will need to demonstrate adequate public facilities, including roads, police, plans for runoff, protection of neighboring subdivisions from flooding, wetlands plans, et cetera, are in place for each phase.
And in addition, Ms. Wilson, can you state the second part of yours?
Yes, joint review occur for stormwater and roads.
And so right now, it's all of that.
And I second all of that.
Seconded by Mr. Coles for all of the above. I think I'm fine with the current density because if staff is recommending it, then we all are. Ms. Amick, are you? Do you also have a?
I have a question about Ms. Jarrett's amendment. Is this a time?
That's up to the chair.
I think that I don't want to go away with the questions unanswered.
Can you please repeat it?
Yes. Recommend approval of the map amendment. This is a map amendment. I'm recommending approval with the condition that all of the phases they bring back to us will need to demonstrate adequate public facilities, including roads, police.
Fire.
Yeah, I didn't say fire, unfortunately. Plans for runoff. Protection of neighboring subdivisions from flooding, wetland plans, et cetera, are in place.
Okay, demonstrate, how is that? With plans?
Yes.
And are in place, sounds like they need to be in place before they build, like we talked about in the meeting, pre-meeting.
I would say plans for them need to be in place with
plans.
Date certain.
Okay.
Reasonable?
I'm happy. Call the question.
All right. Call the question. Ms. Amy?
I think so.
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett? Sorry. Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.
And I too say yes. All right, passed unanimously. Thank you.
All right, because we haven't had enough, we have one more item.
Chairman, may I ask a question?
Can you get with staff?
Tom.
Okay.
Okay, excellent. All right, so final item for today. Oh, I'll give a second. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Uh-oh. Look at all these papers coming to me right now. I'm going to suggest we postpone this one so I can read these papers because I'm not going to get these papers here. Please? Yes. No, just water. I can't believe this. This is just ridiculous. Giving me this much paper one time and the fourth item is ordered.
I'm so into projects now.
Really?
Oh God!
After
look at your Republican project doing that,
they're going to make you the agent.
Most real world that I care about, and
probably Mr. Yellow.
Little Neck Road is a disaster. Sorry.
I got you. Oh.
Understood. I need to go too, but I'm going to stick around. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Melder, for being here.
At least
All right, can we finish this up? Mr. Plunk. Where's everybody else?
I'm going to let you do most of the talking.
Okay, yeah. If you'll click my PowerPoint for me when you
there we go.
Do it, I think it's only
PowerPoint. Ms. Amick.
And then you'll hit the down button.
I know.
To go through your slides. Okay. Or I think you can actually scroll if you want to, but it's a little faster if you scroll. But yeah, you just hit down.
Yeah. Yes, he told me he was. Back to work.
6, 7.
But we can go ahead and get started. I
do
think
we have a
they're here. They're just, and all he's going to do is start introducing.
I think we need one more.
I think you're right too.
What is it? Half plus one? You sure? Okay. All right. I've done enough redos today. All right.
We can.
Okay. So, sorry. So I'm going to speak very, very little on this because Mr. Brandon has a very, very thick PowerPoint, and I think we're all pleased to see each other, but probably ready to break. So this is a petition that originally came to this board, again, back in 2023. If you recall, there were many residents that were here. They were very concerned about the build quality, and I would say that was probably one of the biggest issues that made this probably not go forward at that time. This board asked the petitioner to come back after having neighborhood meetings. They did have those meetings as requested. They also went back and, as I said, they submitted a letter for the record stating they were no longer pursuing the increase to the original 11,000 in terms of housing units that would be permitted. They are continuing to pursue the 9,000 that was the result of the most recent amendment to the New Hampstead PUD master plan. And so what you can see on your screen right now, these are the two parcels that are impacted, but we're out in New Hampstead. And this is a master plan amendment and a PD text amendment. So you can see the future land use map and zoning map here. They are backwards, unfortunately. This is the future land use map. And this is the zoning map. It is zoned PD. You can see here some proposed changes to the map where at one property we're going to have a change from institutional use to multifamily use. And at 2100 Little Neck Road, we're going to have a change of the use of this parcel to allow for a mix of residences and commercial uses. So from commercial to village. And so those are the changes that you'll see on the map. I'm going to briefly summarize the text changes that you'll see. There are more. This is just kind of a brief summary. Within the conventional neighborhood, and I guess to clarify the statement that there was an increase in density, what we're actually doing is seeing a concentration of density in pods that are already designated for particular uses. And so that's being achieved by changing the single family detached maximum from 4 per net acre to 5. And then also, again, for the single family attached, the increase from 8 units per net acre to 10 units per net acre, increasing the allowance for multifamily units from 12 to 15 units per net acre. We're changing the lot widths, increasing the height slightly from 35 to 38 for single family. And from 45 to 50 for multifamily. There are also some changes in the traditional area that are very similar in nature. Again, just propose some relaxation in order to get greater density on tracts that are already designated. And then finally, in the village neighborhood, 3-story maximum for commercial and 45-foot maximum height, and 4-story maximum for any building that contains dwelling units. With a 50-foot maximum height. So I'm summarizing these very quickly for you, but again, Rob Brandon is going to come and speak at length and in detail. Just to show you our authority here, we're relying upon this is designated section 8-3241 that speaks to modifications to the approved master plan. These are of a nature that this will ultimately go on to City Council. So. With that, MPC staff does recommend approval. I'm going to make way for Mr. Brandon to come up and give you the details.
Hello. Is everybody awake still? Been here a little while. Like Henry VIII told his first wife, I won't keep you long. But I'm Rob Brannon. I'm here with Will Bergsteiner, who is with the developer. And I'm going to take you just about 2 minutes of slides just to kind of update you to what we have, because you've been hearing about some new PUDs, but New Hampstead is a very mature PUD. It's been here a long time. In fact, about 20 years ago, International Paper contacted me about annexing this property into the city, and it's this red parcel here. It's about 4,200 acres. It was supposed to be the westward expansion of the city of Savannah. And just as International Paper does everything, they did this the right way. There was no expense spared in trying to plan this thing and set it up. And the idea was to have a sustainable community with a village center, with parks, schools, all accessible from the interior of this property. And you can see some of the examples of the property as it's been developed in those 20 years. We planned with them very carefully for road improvements because we knew that was going to be a problem. This is an example of a plat showing the yellow. We reserved 100 feet along Little Neck Road all the way down so that Little Neck Road could be expanded. We're an advocate for that as the master developer. The city's very aware that needs to be done, and we've been meeting with them about that. We entered into a water and sewer agreement to make sure that we would have adequate water and sewer access. And ultimately, we developed a land plan and a PUD. This was the original land plan, and you can see it has a village area here that was supposed to be shopping and residential mix, sort of a little town center, if you will. The purple with schools that would be installed. The green you can see down here, parks and recreational facilities, ball fields, tennis courts, and all of those types of things. The idea was that we don't develop property. We would sell large tracts, hundreds of acres of land to neighborhood developers like D.R. Horton or Landmark 24. They would come back to the city with a site plan after we had carefully reviewed it and they met all of our design guidelines. And that's how this has progressed. Once we started selling lots, we built these large boulevards through the property with the help of the city of Savannah. You can see the width and breadth of this. Y'all also can see some water down there where we made plans for drainage and stormwater management. And as far as we know, the reports from our developers is all of those systems have worked even during the hurricanes, and we haven't had big problems with drainage out here. We donated land to the city for municipal improvements, water wells, sanitary sewer. We made provision for schools to be built, and they were built. New Hampstead High School is located on this property. It opens or will open to the interior of the property so that people can go to the school without having to go out onto Little Neck Road or 204. The New Hampstead K-8 school was built on the property. It's shown here. These are the parks, 47 acres of passive parks, 130 acres of ball fields and tennis courts to be located on the interior of the property. These are city properties. And then in 2019, we donated 730 acres for a wildlife preserve, which is all of this area in green. And that was when we first reduced our density. Our original density was 11.9, something like that. We reduced it down to about 9,800 because that land was no longer available for development. More recently, we've been meeting with the city to talk about needed road improvements. And I hear in the pre-meeting that that's a concern, and that is our concern too, 100%. We're very on top of that, talking to them about what needs to be done, when it needs to be done to meet our development guidelines. We've planned traffic improvements and how those are going to be paid for and implemented. Traffic lights, traffic circles, those are things within the property that we're responsible for, but the city and the county and the state are ultimately responsible for those other roadways that we're trying to get improved. When we asked for our development of regional impact study last time, they brought up a question that we were unaware of about water capacity. And that's what has delayed us so long coming back to you over the last year. We met with the city. We renegotiated our water and sewer agreement to make sure that we would have capacity for water in increments as we built the development out. And the water and sewer amendment has a schedule with how many units per year we anticipate, and the city commits to provide those number of units every year based on that. Currently, we think there are about 700 units out there. You can see that there's some pretty nice properties, which brings us to now. We've been working on this PUD amendment for about a year now, and we did have the community meeting. We heard from the community that they were worried about density, so we withdrew our request for an increase in density. I don't think we really needed it anyway. That was not the problem we were trying to solve. The problem we were trying to solve is that we have fewer net acres because of more sophisticated engineering and drainage and amenities that we have to provide. So there were fewer net acres for us to build those units on. So we were trying to find a way to make the property marketable by getting enough units per acre to make it work. So this is our new master plan amendment. There are two minor map changes, and so I want to point those out first. The first one is located up here, and both of these are designed to react to the market, which is asking for a lot more residential units and less commercial type stuff. This was an institutional parcel up here, right on Little Neck Road. We're asking to change that to multifamily. This parcel down here was commercial. It was just below this was going to be our grocery store parcel here. We were going to try to get a grocery store in here or Publix or something. But just below that, we had another commercial parcel. We're going to make that a village parcel, which is a mix of commercial and residential. We think we'll still need some commercial there, but again, we're trying to respond to the market and add a few residential units in there. Those were the map amendments. And then, as I mentioned a minute ago, we had some text changes. All of these text changes were designed to let us get those units per net acre, which is consistent with the zoning ordinance. What we had our engineers do is go and say, for us to be consistent with NUZO, you know, what could we do under our ordinance to gain a few units? And this is what we came back with. This is our conventional neighborhood, 4 to 5 units, 8 to 10 for single family attached, like townhomes, multifamily, 12 to 15 units. And on a single family detached in this neighborhood from 50 feet to 40 feet. So those are the simplest version of the changes that are in our ordinance. We also have what we call traditional neighborhoods. This might appear in the village where you would have a lane in the back, kind of like the city of Savannah, where access could be made from the lane. Parking would be there. These neighborhoods are a little bit smaller. A lot of times they would have, you know, commercial on the bottom, perhaps residential on the top. So again, for the detached, 4 to 5 units, 8 to 10 for single family attached, and the lot width from 40 to 30. Finally, in the village neighborhood only, which is where we're going to have our commercial, we wanted to get a little bit more height so that we could get some residential units on top of those commercial village units. So I think generally our changes are pretty minimal. We're just making a few tweaks to an ordinance that was written 20 years ago and is a little outdated. There are some other changes that are technical in nature. The city staff has been working on our ordinance to try to make it more compatible with NUZO. So we've made a number of changes that they requested, but they're really just technical things, not things that affect the development itself. That's all I have, ma'am.
Questions? I have one little question. Do you have a fire station site?
The city has requested that we donate a site for a fire station, and we have agreed to do that, and those negotiations are ongoing.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry.
The guy behind. Come up to the mic and state your name for the record, please.
I'm Will Bergsteiner. I'm the project director for New Hampstead. I was in 2003 to 2010, and I am again from 2018 till now. We have two fire station sites, and one of them has a smaller police precinct associated with it. There is a, and that is, if there's a thing, the master plan.
That's okay. I just was curious if you had.
One of them is under construction right now.
Okay, good.
There's two of them. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
I have a question. You were saying that, and I may have heard you wrong. I'm looking at your last slide, I think. Wait a minute. Maybe it's not your last slide. It's the map. It's a 2024 master plan amendment map. Yes. Where you're taking out some commercial and specifically grocery store.
This is the grocery store. We're not taking out the grocery store site. We're just taking out the commercial parcel that was below it. And it's actually a smaller parcel than it appears because it's got a lot of wetlands here. I think you had asked earlier about this neighborhood back here.
Yes.
And so there are some significant wetlands buffering this commercial site from those wetlands there.
Okay, because that community is in desperate need of a grocery store because of, as of right now, everybody gets on Little Neck and goes all the way up to 16 into onto Pooler Parkway to go to Publix, or all the way down Little Neck, all the way to 204 to Kroger. There's no grocery stores to service that community.
We are currently under a letter of intent on the CB or the C7B. That's a 20-acre parcel. It will be a grocer anchored. There's a commitment we have that we can't go public with, but it'll be an overall about 120,000 square foot shopping center. Where we change this part down below, that is now Village. And it will allow commercial below and residential above. The Village core, Village 1, 2, and 3, a lot of commercial below, residential above, offices, retail, sit-down restaurants, that sort of thing. There are community trails along all the primary roads that are put in as each parcel is developed that come to the Village core. They're built 8 foot wide to accommodate golf carts and walking and running and that sort of thing. So there's terrific long-term aspect of recreation involved with it. If you looked at that amendment of the master plan, the green area that covered the bottom right-hand side, that's land that we have already donated to the city of Savannah as a wildlife recreation conservation easement. There will be trails that are allowed to go through that, some camping sites, that sort of thing. I think it's going to be a very dynamic thing for Savannah as well as Chatham County that there's going to be no park like this. And it will end up being one of the greatest features of this development when it matures on out.
Excellent. And a grocery store.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? I'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Bowles second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Ms. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
And I guess it's back to me. I too say yes. So motion passes.
Motion to adjourn.
I don't think we have any other business. Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, guys.